This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I am Dean Holland, and how are you this morning, Charlie Dobbin?
Oh, I'm just tired of winter.
Yeah, I know. I had that glorious, glorious feeling just two mornings ago. I stepped out and I thought, that's that spring smell. Yeah. And now we're under a snow squall watch again this morning, and it's snowing up here in the Collingwood area. It's like, come on.
Well, we're still very white where I am in the county, but this is the winter that just keeps on giving. It doesn't want to leave.
I called it the dance all winter long. It seems to have danced on either side of zero, little bit above, a little bit below, a little bit above. I mean, it just seems to be that way. And the conversation, I have to say, is on a lot of people's lips. I have talked to a lot of people this week who have been talking about the same thing and the fact that they're looking on their gardens. I've had a lot of people say, oh, my goodness, my flowers are coming up. My tulips are coming up. Mm-hmm. Some are worried. Some are not. I know your take on it is that the flowers are pretty smart, things.
Don't worry. I mean, I have photographs of April 2018, maybe 19, where mid-April, I had all kinds of blooming bulbs. I had irises and tulips and all these things blooming, and we had quite a heavy snowfall. I took photos of all these beautiful little perky flowers poking up out of the snow. And of course, the next day I took another picture and 90% of the snow had melted because it was April after all. Right. But yeah, the flowers can withstand, these early, early spring bloomers, they can withstand pretty extreme temperatures. And the worst thing that can happen is you get a little bit of frost damage, but the plants will not die.
Gotcha. Well, the best thing that can happen is that we get lots of callers with lots of great questions on the show today. And I am looking forward to another hour with you because I always learn tons. And we're going to open up the phone lines just before we go to our commercial break. The number, if you are a Toronto resident, is 416-360-0740. Or if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, it is a toll-free number. It is 1-866-740-4740. And of course, we want you to let our producer Carlos know if you are a first time caller. And of course, I will give you the beloved and well earned garden wings. Please call often, please call early, and one question per call, please. So, unless you have anything else, Charlie, we'll go to our first break.
Let's do that.
We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back on The Garden Show. And gardening is in the air. Yes, indeed. The numbers to call, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. And folks, we got lots of room open on the line, so give us a call. Indoor gardening question, outdoor gardening question. And you wanted to send out a little reminder as well here, didn't you, Charlie?
Well, it's interesting you just said gardening is in the air and it just started to snow at my house. But
well, it's water. They're just doing your watering for you, right?
I guess. And of course, we know in our hearts spring is coming. So there are some events going on. I just want to remind people, I'm happy to announce events that are going on. If you'd like me to, you just have to email me in advance. Katie Fullerton sent me an email reminding you to mark on your calendars next Saturday, March 25th, between 11 and 4 p.m. The Scarborough Seedy Saturday and Green Fair is going on. And this is a big deal. This is Scarborough's, headline Spring Has Sprung event. This fair has over 50 exhibitors, heirloom seed vendors, seed exchange, gardening booths, environmental organizations, green living ideas, and answers to your growing questions. So that's next Saturday, like I said, 11 to 4 at the St. John Henry Newman High School, which is 100 Brimley Road South, just south of Kingston Road, so down at the south end of Scarborough. They are on Facebook. If you want to check into this, just go to facebook.com/events. And of course, they would be three S's, SSSG Fair. So Scarborough City Saturday and Green Fair.
Okay, sounds good. Okay. We do actually have a caller on the line.
It's
your show. You go right ahead.
Well, no, I started by saying, you know, feel free to email me if you want any kind of announce your events. My email address is my first initial C dot last name Dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N. So C dot Dobbin at mzmedia.com.
I should have done that. I apologize. I should have given your email out. So, but it's, you know, it's 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. There we are. Actually, you know what? I love this time of day and I love this time of year. I know that's the comment. There's a lot of people that don't like this time of year because it's mucky, you know? So, but and I think we've talked about this. I love this time of year because it is mucky, because I know what's coming. I know what is around the corner. And so I always get a little bit giddy around this time of year. So let's see if our first caller feels the same way. We have Diane on the line from Mississauga. Welcome to the Garden Show, Diane.
Hi, I'm enjoying your show every week. I just think this is a great show and you guys are doing a good job. So I give you a little tap on the shoulder for the start of the show today.
Woohoo!
I'm bringing my things out from the cold storage, my bulbs, my dahlia bulbs and whatnot, and I have a very large, I mean, it's got to be about, I want to say five inches round begonia, tuberous begonia that I've had for years and years and years. And I've been planting it every year, and last year I noticed it really had a lot of main stems coming out of it. And I want to know whether or not I can break that bulb up and still get some growth off of it. I'm afraid to do it because I don't want it to rot. It's so old, and it was gorgeous last year.
You know what? You're absolutely correct. Like a tuberous begonia bulb is like a cup-shaped, so it's concave. And when we plant it, the bowl, if you will, is facing up to the sky, and it's all around the edges of the rim of the bowl where you'll start to get your growth. And you can propagate that, but I'm going to just, it's been so long since I tried to propagate a tuberous begonia. I'll come back later after a break here. I'm just going to do a quick search so I can tell you exactly how to do this, because it is a bit scary. They could rot if they're not treated properly.
Yeah, I know. I had three of them, and they were all the same size. So one of them last year, I guess the squirrels got hungry and dug it up and, just took like a little bite out of it and then threw it away, put it aside, and I planted it again, and it rotted. I lost the whole thing.
Yeah, well, it's a very fleshy corm, if you will, and it can rot if the water sits on the bulb, or it's actually a tuber. If water sits on it, or if it's constantly wet, or it doesn't get sufficient air circulation, they can rot. So that's why when I'm just going to double check this, but ultimately you're going to slice it all up. And when you slice it, you're going to open up wounds, and that's where rot can enter into the tuber. Yeah. So that's why I just want to make sure I tell you exactly how to do this properly. But
okay.
No worries. Okay. It's good for you. And always worth keeping tuberous begonia bulbs or tubers, because you pay quite a lot for them and they just get bigger and bigger. So the plants just get better and better if you can hold them like you have in cold storage for the winter.
Yeah.
So good for
you. I'm surprised I've been able to keep it.
So, Diane and Charlie, I know, Charlie, you're going to look that up. We will address that before the end of the show, Diane. I have to take a break now. So we'll let you go, we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show. Okay, thank you.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show. The numbers to call, because I have lots of room on the line, is 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-740-4740. Yeah, don't be shy. You know, Charlie Dobbin's not scary at all. She's just a very clever woman and knows a whole lot about gardening. And have you been, what was that?
I don't know everything, that's for sure.
Well, you know what? There's lots to know, though. I mean, there's so many variables, even when you're talking about seeds, and I have a question about seeds in a moment, and a comment, because, you know, just chat during the week about gardening to different people. But do you want to sort of add something about these tubers that we were talking about?
Right. So Diane, who I'm sure is still listening, called about tuberous begonia, the fact that she's got a very large tuber and she'd like to propagate it and have small tubers. And I said something about cutting it apart, and I'm completely wrong. Unlike potato tubers, we do not cut begonia tubers into little pieces.
Okay.
Okay. You just run the risk of rot. It's too high of a risk. You can lose them all if you start chopping up that tuber. So believe it or not, as the tuber gets bigger and bigger, and as Diane plants it, you know, wakes it up, it's been dormant all in a cold storage all winter. She's going to put it into some well-drained media, just planting it on the surface, basically. And little green stems are going to start to grow. The bottom line, the most common way to propagate tuberous begonias is to root cuttings. So what will happen as those little stems start to grow up off of the tuber, you can thin out the stems when they're about 3 inches tall. And by doing that, because she mentioned as the tuber's getting bigger and bigger, she's ending up with more and more stems. So of course, back when they're still young, still in the house, they're not outside yet, they're in a pot, you can remove about 3 inch tall cuttings. And then sometimes people will take a little sharp razor blade and cut a small piece of the tuber attached to each of those shoots to increase the chances of rooting that stem. But then again, you're wounding the tuber, so there's that cost-benefit analysis you got to do. So before you take the cuttings, prepare what's called a Forsyth pot in which to root them. So this is very interesting. Forsyth, Forsythe, and this is from the extension education from the University of Minnesota. An unglazed 2 to 3 inch unglazed clay pot, cork the drainage hole in the bottom, fill a 10 inch plastic pot with vermiculite, put the clay pot down into the vermiculite inside the plastic pot so they're level, and there should be a 3 inch wide ring of vermiculite around the clay pot. Moisten the vermiculite, fill the clay pot with water, cut the stems to be rooted and insert them into the moist vermiculite. It's a great idea, actually. Put this whole thing into a clear plastic bag, fasten the top of the bag to keep the air out and the cuttings humid, so you're creating like a little mini greenhouse, and those begonia cuttings are in that vermiculite that's being moistened from that clay pot in the center. Set the pot in a warm place with bright indirect light, no direct light, otherwise you're setting up an oven. And a warm place, I've had great success with a heating pad on the lowest possible heat, and makes a real difference to the growth of young plants. And so you never have to do any watering, you just leave it alone for 2 to 4 weeks, and then you've got rooted cuttings and you're good to go. And if Diane is successful getting a bunch of more begonias, at the end of this growing season, she'll have small tubers to harvest and then again put them away for the winter. And before you know it, she's going to be in the tuberous begonia business.
Well, wow, that sounds like quite the process, but very interesting.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that there are other things that we talk about on the show that you can literally open your door, throw them out onto the garden, and they will grow. And you have to do nothing. You know.
Like dandelions.
Yeah, like dandelions. Oh, I just had a shiver go up my spine. Dandelions. Wow. Okay. Very good. So I hope that is helpful for you, Diane. I'm sure it is. It sounds like, actually, I like things like that. It's kind of fun, you know, dig in, and it's a challenge.
It's a project.
Yeah, Yeah, right? For sure.
Sometimes it's fun to try new projects.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Stephanie on the line. She's calling from Toronto, and she is a first-time caller. Welcome to the Garden Show, Stephanie.
Thank you.
There you go. There are your garden wings.
Thanks very much.
You earned them.
I did already. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You just have to call in and be a first-time caller, and you get them.
Awesome. I have a question for you, Charlie. And my question is regarding canna lilies. Not canna lilies, sorry. Cannas. I've been growing cannas for a number of years, and most of the time they were the typical red ones. And I would, in the fall, cut them back and clean up the rhizome and put it away over winter in a cool, dark storage in a box just wrapped in newspaper. I've gone from the red to yellow and orange cannas, and the rhizomes are much smaller. And I've done the same process, cleaning them off and storing them away in newspaper in a box. But I noticed when I go to pull them out, the yellow-orange ones don't really survive. The red ones do because the rhizomes are so much bigger. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to get a better return on the ones that will survive through the winter?
Okay, so this is a good question, but it actually brings up something that we see in many species of plants. The original canna lily was red, and right. So they tend to be very easy to grow. And as you point out, the rhizomes are huge. You know, you can start with kind of a squidgy little one, and in 3 or 4 years, you've got a whole field of cannas because they're big and vigorous, and they grow fast, and they withstand overwintering in our basements. Mm-hmm. However, you get into some of the fancy ones, the yellows and the oranges and pinks, they have been more highly bred and selected, and they're not nearly as tough or vigorous. So they're smaller and a little more finicky when it comes to overwintering. But as far as I know, unless there's somebody listening who has, and there might be somebody who's listening right now who would like to call in with any tips or techniques that they've used to help with, you know, just ensuring that the viability of the oranges and yellows, happy to hear from you, because certainly like you said, I've had super easy success with the red ones, but not so easy success with some of the oranges and yellows.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you know what you're doing. You're doing the right thing.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I'm trying to save them because yellow oranges are quite expensive to buy if you're buying, you know, every year, and they only survive through the summer, and that's it. So, if anybody has an answer to it, I would certainly like to hear, you know, what options there are to keep these things alive.
With the ones, what media have you been, you just putting them in a box with what, peat moss, or what have you been doing with the?
I'm not using peat moss. I'm just wrapping them in a lot of newspaper. And putting them in a box.
I see. And they're not being subjected to any frost, obviously. They're in your basement?
To any what?
There's no frost damage. Like they're in the garage.
No, they're in a creepy space, like in a crawl space. Yeah. And I even put a cover over them, so if we do get, you know, minus 20 degrees outside, they're insulated. And there's no frost in the crawl space at all. It's cool, but there's no frost.
Just looking here quickly, the one other thing, and this will make a difference, is where we cure the rhizomes. So after the first frost in the fall, and all the foliage has turned to brown mush, and you cut that all back, and with your digging fork, you dig up all these tubers. They do need to dry down before they go into storage. So I assume you put them on a garage or a porch or something for at least a couple of days. The soil needs to dry a bit, and the actual rhizomes need to toughen up a bit before you wrap them in newspaper.
Yes. After I wash them, I put them on my deck and let them dry in the sun for, you know, whatever days are left. So
I never washed
them.
They
dry into the box.
Yeah, I would not recommend washing, because
you
do certainly encourage rot by having the high moisture level. It's right. It's more about raising them out of the ground, laying them out on newspapers until the soil dries a bit, and then with your fingers just gently rubbing off any of that soil. Shake it off, cut off any foliage, anything that's still attached. But and you can even divide your clumps at that point. But I would not wash them.
Okay, so I personally. Won't wash them next time. All right.
Yeah. And okay. When you're storing them, make sure, well, you're wrapping them individually so they're not touching each other, because that's important as well. When I've kept them over the winter, I have put them into like a dry media, like a vermiculite or a peat moss, around, like even around the rhizomes a little bit inside the newspaper, but it's dry. And it's okay. Just to sort of keep them a little bit so they're not so shocked that they're with just newspaper.
Okay. Well, the one thing I did not do is wrap them individually. I just put, you know, all the yellows together and kind of group them so they are touching each other. So maybe that's not
right. Because you know why? As soon as one has a little bit of rot, they all have it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
I will. There you go. There it is. That's the tip.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Charlie. Love your show.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call, Stephanie. And don't be a stranger. There you go. Yeah. And that is why we ask Charlie Dobbin. That's so interesting to me. I sit here and I listen to all of this. I watch and I see your wheels turning. And eventually, through enough conversation, you get to what the problem is most likely the case. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We always say one question per caller, but then I always ask the caller about 10 questions.
Sure. Yeah. Now, how big would these rhizomes be? How would they be?
Well, the reds. Well, if you don't divide them, they can be the size of a Sasquatch foot. Like
retarded. Really? Big. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But that's why when you lift them in the fall, they're just too unwieldy to package up and put away. Sometimes we don't save them all because we've got so much, or we divide them up at that point. And again, when we're dividing, we're slicing, we're wounding, we're opening up the tissue to any kind of disease organisms. So lots of dry out the wounds before we store.
Of course. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have, we're going to Chatham now. We have Barbara on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Barbara.
Thank you so much. We have on the north side of our house a narrow bed. It's 30 inches or 2 Sasquatch feet wide deep. it's getting hotter and hotter, and this little section doesn't get sun until about 1 p.m., but then it gets it until whatever sun is left in that day. And the house is white. It's next to a concrete path, and we've tried irises in there, and then we just wanted irises somewhere else. We had hostas in there last year, and they got so washed out in color and faded, and you couldn't see the definition between green and white or whatever varieties we had there. And so we're going to move those out, and we'd like tips on now. Maybe we can put some cactus in. Like, I don't know what to put there. It's so hot.
Right. Well, so what happened to your hostas is they got sunburned.
Yeah.
So late, like the afternoon sun is the hottest sun compared to the morning. So sounds like you've got just that happening. And like you said, it's a narrow bed. So if possible, how is the soil in that bed? Do you supplement it with, composted manure or homemade compost or anything like that?
Yes, as we plant anywhere on the property, we introduce compost and better soil anywhere we're planting.
Because irises would be a good choice. They are, obviously very drought tolerant, handle the sun, a little bit short lived in terms of their flowering. So that's the only, for me, the drawback on irises is they're great for about 3 days. Then they're just a bunch of green stems. Tough plants. There are ever blooming daylilies that would grow there. The sedum, we talked about sedum last week. Sedum as a ground cover, or sedum as a taller plant. Autumn Glory is one of the names that comes to mind. Catnip. Catnip's a great one in the heat. There's one called Walker's Low that I love. It doesn't attract cats, but it blooms so for such a long time in the summer, and it loves the heat, loves the well-drained soil. Russian sage might be bigger than what you want because it'll grow up to 2.5 feet tall, but Russian sage is a great one, again, in a hot spot. Black-Eyed Susans would probably even make it in there because they're pretty tough and resilient. So I would just look for, you know, what kind of color you're looking for, what kind of height you're looking for. Texture obviously matters. And how long is that, 30 inches wide? How long is that bed?
Probably about 80 feet, 50
feet.
Yeah, about 50 feet.
Yeah, so that's big. So
we were thinking ideally in the winter, there's very little places to put snow, and ideally something that dies back. So the daylilies are an option, right? Sedums, of course, would be there all winter. The catnip, what does that do in the winter?
Same thing. These are all herbaceous perennials, so you can leave them up for the winter and then cut back in the spring, or if you need a place to put snow, you can cut back in the fall. Same with the sedum. You could cut them back in the fall. It's such a huge amount of space there. I love zinnias, and zinnias do great in hot, sunny locations. And, of course, they would die back because they're annuals. But you would need quite a lot of zinnias to fill a space like that.
Well, we have a greenhouse, so maybe we can work on that.
Yeah. And they're not hard to grow from seed. Zinnia seeds come up pretty nicely.
And you're
in Chatham.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for your time. Keep up the great work.
Thanks for the call there, Barbara. Yeah, it's interesting. Some places around the houses are tricky. We have one in front of on the north side of our house, which hardly gets any sun, and it's right below a window. And it's and I've struggled there as to over the years what to plant because it doesn't get enough light for a lot of things. And so right now we've got mint growing in there, which at least gives us some green along the white. But you know, and it keeps it contained as well because of course spearmint can take over an entire property.
Exactly, that's the thing. So that's a good choice in there because mint will grow anywhere.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so it gives us a green little flash again under the window against. We also have a white brick house, and so it. But for a long time, we struggled as to what to put there.
Did you ever try hostas?
We have it's too narrow of a space. It's like about a foot from the wall. So it's the hostas we have elsewhere. My wife, that's one of her favorites. She adores her hostas, and we divide them up and put them in different places. They like a little more shade, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so, depending. There are some varieties of hosta that can withstand a fair amount of sun, but generally speaking, they all do well in the shade.
In the shade. Okay. We have to pause, take a short break for some great messages. But we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show. Our numbers to call, 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-740-4740. Charlie, we're jumping to the other side of the border. We're going to our neighbors of the south. We have a caller from Buffalo, New York. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Very happy to have you. Yeah.
Thank you. I wanted to share my canna lily story with the lady that called previously. 23 years ago when I started my garden, I didn't really know what I was doing. So when the fall came, I cut the canna lilies back to about 2 feet, got some free cardboard boxes from the liquor store, and just dug them out of the ground and put them in the box with soil still around the bulb. Shook some of the loose soil off, but basically put them all then, like all 12 boxes in the basement with the soil. And usually around December or January, I'd go down there with a couple gallons of water and just throw a little bit of water on them. And then when I bring them up in the spring, usually the soil is so dry around the bulb that it just crumbles off. And then I plant them back into new soil. And I've had great success with that.
Wow. That's different.
Yeah, I didn't know there's so much. I even do my dahlia bulbs like that, leave them in the soil and put them in a box and then water them in the winter. And I had no idea until I started listening to your show that there was so much involved in properly storing your bulbs.
You're obviously having success, so it's great. Mm-hmm. With the soil attached, the garden soil attached to the tubers that you're bringing into your house, have you ever found you've brought in, sow bugs, whatever, worms, any little critters come in with the canna roots and the soil attached?
Not that I've really noticed, and I don't have a finished basement. It's a very rudimentary basement, and it's a little bit damp at most times. So I've never really noticed bugs upstairs as a result of having all the plants downstairs all these years.
Yeah, and you know what? It's a lot. What you're suggesting is a lot easier as well. The idea of and calla lilies are a good example. Dahlias, like you said, if you're growing them in pots for the summer as a beautiful, you know, container garden or whatever, you're right. You don't need to actually lift them up out of the pots. If you can transport the bulb or the tuber in the pot into your cool, dark basement or wherever you're going with it, it's so much easier. You know, you don't have to unpot them if they're already in pots. Just leave them in the pot, put them in the dark, the cool, and forget about them. And like you said, throw a little water on them on occasion just so they don't die from lack of water. So good tips, yeah.
I do that with the geraniums too, leave them in the pots. I pull them out April, May. They look absolutely horrible, brown, dead, stocky, and within a month, they're all growing again.
Exactly. Yeah. Good. You epitomize the lazy gardener. I like it.
And I just didn't know any better is what it was. So I was thinking the lady that has the yellow, pink, and orange canna bulbs, maybe because they are so tender, if she just put them in soil and put them in the basement and then gave them a little bit of water so they would still go dormant, but yet they wouldn't be starving without soil around them, maybe that would help her, you know, bring them back in the spring.
Maybe. Good ideas. Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for the call, Michelle. That's that really neat. Really, really neat. Let's go right now, just because now the phone lights, of course, are lighting up. And so let's go to Carol in Waterdown.
Hi there.
Morning. Hey, how are you, Carol?
I'm doing good, thank you. I have a question about some seeds that have been given to me. Some are poppies and some are coleus. And I've had them in like a paper bags over the winter, but I don't know how to prepare them for, you know, growing this spring.
What kind of poppies are they? Do you know? Are they perennial or annual?
I think they're perennial. I know they are because I know where I got them from.
Okay. Did you want to try and start those seeds inside or did you want to just scatter them outside?
Scatter them.
Yeah, it's easier to scatter them, but it's harder to be successful unless you've got a really good spot planned for them. The coleus should come up. Coleus, interesting. You got coleus seeds. Usually coleus is propagated by cuttings because there's so many beautiful colors, right?
Yes, yes.
Seeds will not necessarily look like the parent they came from, but I would get going on both the poppies and the coleus now if you wanted to plant them indoors. And it's just seed starting mix, moistened. Both of these are tiny seeds and they're sown virtually on the surface of the soil. And warmth. If you can provide some warmth below the seeds, you will have better germination. Once they start to grow, then they need light. And then, by the time we're frost-free, you harden them off, by toughen them up to be ready to go outside. Poppies, like either of those should germinate fairly easily. It's just a matter of giving them the environment in which it'll encourage the blooming. If you don't want to do it inside, wait until we're a little closer to this winter that's never ending. So wait till probably mid-April, and then I would sow them outside directly where you want them to grow.
Okay. And I can just scatter them. I don't have to bury them, so to speak.
No, pretend you're Mother Nature. What Mother Nature does not cover those seeds. Poppies particularly, they they emerge from the. It's so cool. I love the way poppy seeds, how they look after the poppies are finished. The vessel that the seeds are in, and they just get the winds. They're tiny seeds, and wind just scatters them. They land on the surface of the soil, and they grow.
Yes, yes, they do. Yeah, they really travel, don't they? Yeah. A friend has several in the garden. Okay, thank you very much for your help.
Yeah, thanks for the call there.
Good luck. Let us know how that works out.
So many different ways to plant things. Charlie, have to take another break. We have James on the line. We have Sam on the line. We will try and get both of those in when we return here on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show, and we'll jump right back into our callers. We have James on the line, who is calling from Etobicoke. Welcome to The Garden Show, James.
Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Charlotte.
Good morning.
Oh, wow.
I think I know who this is.
Congratulations on your great gardening show, Charlotte.
Thank you so much, James.
Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, I recognize yours, too.
Okay. Listen, I've had no success with roses for myself or for any of my landscape plants. To the point we don't plant them anymore. What's the best soil for roses?
Wow. I'm surprised you're saying that. I mean, there's so many different kinds of roses. The best soil, in a general sense, is well-drained and fertile. So that means it should be a loamy soil, but it's got drainage is so important. Roses do not ever want to sit in you never plant them in a low-lying part of the garden where the water tends to collect. And, of course, it goes without saying, full sun.
So what, in terms of fertile, would you suggest adding a fertile compost or say something like that for the garden every spring?
Yes, always think about organic material every spring for all gardens. But roses are what we call heavy feeders. So when I grow roses, it's full sun. It's, like I say, well-drained soil that has been amended with some kind of organic material. And it might be if it was a tender rose and it was hilled for the winter with soil around or triple mix over the crown of the plant, then I pull that back in the spring, but I still leave it in the area of the roses. So that soil from winter protection is now still there providing, you know, organic matter, et cetera, through the season. But when I do all my pruning of roses in the spring, I fertilize, and I do use a synthetic rose food because roses like their fertilizer, okay. But just the once. I only do it once.
Well, that's great advice. Thanks so much. It's just that I've never had any success, and I thought, well, why not ask the expert?
Well, thank you, sir. But you know what? There's so many different roses out there. You know, the ones particularly growing on their own roots tend to be the easiest to grow, but they also tend to become the biggest plants. So don't be afraid to prune. You know, get on those leather gauntlets in the spring and get in there and bring the plants to a reasonable size and make sure they're pruned to grow in an open form. And you'll have also better success with the sun and the air penetrating into the plants throughout the growing season.
Right. Well, that's great. Thanks so much. I appreciate your help.
Hey, my pleasure. Don't be a stranger.
Thanks for the call there, James.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, Charlotte, we're going to go to our next call. Charlotte being the long form of Charlie.
Yes. Blame my mother, okay? She named me Charlotte, and when I didn't turn out to be a little princess, she renamed me Charlie. So, you know, I was Charlotte for 2 years of my life, and I've been Charlie ever since.
Absolutely. Well, you know what, Charlie, you're still the same person, and you know all this wonderful stuff about gardening, and here we go. We're going to the south of the border again. We're going to New York. We have Sam on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Sam.
Hi, Charlie. I got a question about germinating seeds. If I had a hybrid pepper, can I germinate the seed?
Oh, like a pepper seed that you've saved?
Yes. I was told by one of the farmers that if you take a hybrid pepper, the seeds will not germinate.
You know what? I think that person's wrong. I think the seeds will germinate. But you may not get peppers that you want to eat on the plant. So that it's all about what we call breeding true. So it's when a plant is hybridized, the parentage of the plant has obviously affected the genetics of the plant. And the seeds that form after the cross-pollination and the peppers form and inside are the seeds, when we grow those seeds, we don't necessarily get the same pepper that we just enjoyed, you know, last season. You'll get pepper plants, you'll get peppers, you know, assuming you've got lots of sun and good soil, et cetera. But they might not be, you know, red bell peppers or whatever it is that you specifically were growing from. So we do tend to buy our pepper seeds, unless you're growing old heritage varieties.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm on my way to the Stokes store in Canada.
And you can mail order too.
can you tell me why, if you order seeds from Stokes, it's sent to Buffalo, New York?
No, I have no idea. Oh, through it goes through Buffalo, probably.
Yes,
because
the mailing address
is
P.O. Box 548, Buffalo, New York. I know where it is. It's on Walden Avenue in Buffalo. But you can't buy Stokes seeds in Buffalo. I don't know why.
Well, you know what? It's agricultural products. They always have inspections that have to take place. There's a very real reason why we avoid just shipping plant material across borders, because all kinds of problems have ensued with that. So it could be that they've got a warehouse and they ship out of Buffalo. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into that. They use that way station, if you will, where the inspections take place before the seeds can move on. So I'm not positive.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Yeah. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for that call, Sam. Wow. This is the time of year, I guess, for propagating and planting and pulling those things out of the cellar. So it shouldn't be a surprise to any of us that that has been a lot of the conversation today.
Well, exactly. I know it's on my list to go downstairs, do a little inventory of my seeds, figure out what I've got down there, wash some of those dirty old planting pots, et cetera, from last year, and I'm starting to get excited. I'm not seeding yet, but I do want to start making my piles and my order in which I'm going to start seeding things, because it's almost time to start really getting dirty.
Yeah, well, I expect that this, again, will be the conversation changes to this time of year when the snow starts to recede and the big melt is upon us, as I call it.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And do you have any plans? Have you got anything that you're doing in your garden this week?
Well, like I said, just getting organized and I'm going to fertilize. My house plants need to be fertilized. If that's always a good thing at this time of year. Gotcha. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to the great callers. Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Carlos. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.